This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Juno. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Please say yes, and I'm going to kiss your lips.
I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else but you. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one august of change movies in August. Today we are doing Juno, and I'm here with my most bestest co-host that I wouldn't want to do this podcast with anyone else but you, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Nice. I'm here with the orange to my Tic Tac, the Sonic to my youth, the hot to my pocket, Corinne Edding. That might sound like a really unusual jumble of things, but they're all present in this movie.
Aww.
Hot pocket. You're my hot pocket, Corinne.
What flavor hot pocket am I?
Oh, damn. That's so hard because I really like the pepperoni ones, but I also like the ham and cheese ones. You're my ham, cheese, and pepperoni. How about that? Ooh. They don't make that, but if you were a hot pocket, you'd be them all rolled up into one.
Mm-hmm. I feel so special. I feel so special.
You're just that saucy and savory at the same time. Spicy, saucy, savory at the same time. That's it. You're the whole package, girl, all wrapped up into a crispy, crunchy outer layer. Okay, I'm going to walk away from that right now.
Oh, my gosh.
I just realized I need to redo the logo for the love of Christ. Mm-hmm. We're doing rom-coms now, and it still says Hallmark, and Tamara has been a little bit busy, a little bit preoccupied, and has not changed it yet,
really?
But I will make sure to do that before this one is released.
What have you been busy with? I don't understand. I mean, you live so close to your work. It's just like you're here and back, no problem.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not the problem at all. Well, no, it is not the only problem. But, you know, we've discussed my circumstances and situations with my ex being in the hospital and simultaneously starting a new relationship with somebody and just all the fun that comes with those conflicting things happening at the same time.
Ooh. Sounds like an exciting smorgasbord of an emotional roller coaster of life.
Yeah, don't say the L word.
Life, roller coaster. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Your life is. Damn it! I said the L word. Fuck. Your life is like a roller coaster, baby.
And then,
damn.
I do the Rolling with the Homies dance along with the roller coaster song, and it totally works.
And then I get hit with the clock and we live happily ever after.
Aw, I love it.
Mm-hmm. How have you been lately, Corinne?
Well, you know that I've at least temporarily given up my love, mi amor, Pepsi. And I've...
Oh, that's right.
I've made it to a week without mi corazón, Pepsi.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Yeah.
How have you been doing?
Yeah, you know, just kind of stopped going to the hospital so often because my ex is doing really well.
Yay!
He is waiting to get transferred to a rehabilitation facility, so he's really excited about that. Still gets a little down in the dumps and still needs a little cheering up and coaxing and realizes how difficult it is to have the brothers that he has because he got some bad news about his heart and his brother has had heart surgery previously. So mm-hmm. Dan was just trying to like regale his feelings about finding out this news and what they're going to, you know, do and long-term care and short-term care. And of course his brother's like, I know all about that. I've had heart surgery. He was like the quintessential expert on it all. And my ex was having a really hard time with that. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Did he not tell you that he went to medical school that week you were in a coma? Yeah, we didn't want to let you know. So all that stuff that he's saying is legit true because he knows as much, if not more, than the doctors. So yeah, just take that with a grain of salt.
About Dan's specific heart issue.
Yes, specific heart issue.
Because... to be clear, his brother had a faulty heart valve, which is different than what's going on with Dan. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, No, we all know that. Everybody else in the world seems to know that, except the person that's trying to spout wisdom to the guy in the hospital, which is just like, he's like, I'm taking this medication. And before I even spit out what the medication was, his brother's like, I know what that is. And I'm got to do these. I know what that is. I know what that is all about. And I'm like, why don't next time just stop talking and be like, why don't you tell me what I'm trying to say? Go right ahead. You tell me. You obviously are an expert. Why don't I just stop speaking? You just go ahead. Spout your wisdom. Just spew it at me. I'm good.
Why don't you just tap my back when you want me to open my mouth so that you can tell me what is going to come out of my mouth?
Yeah.
Make it easy.
Or just speak for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just speak for me. I'll be your ventriloquist puppet. Yeah. I'll just sit on your knee and you could just stick your hand up my ass and talk for me. That'd be great. Just probably as painful as this conversation we're having right now.
Oh, poor Jan. Gosh.
And then his other brother, who lives in San Diego, was complaining to Christian, like, Dan's not calling me. And Christian's like, he's in the hospital. You're supposed to be calling him. Like, why aren't you calling to check up on him? When did the responsibility fall on your shoulder, his shoulders, to call you when you regain consciousness? I'm not going to call him till he calls me first. And I'm like, oh, sweet baby Jesus.
Look, he's been done wronged.
And yeah. Why haven't you called me, bro? It's been like a week and a half. I was in a coma. I'm only flipping him shit. He was there often, and I do believe he just has Dan's old phone number, and he was just irritated and just venting to me. So they're not horrible people. Yeah, not get me wrong. It's just sometimes they're not helpful in the ways that he really wants them or needs them to be in certain times. And it's funny to regale me with all the trials and tribulations of having those two as brothers.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been meaning to have a conversation with you, Tam. Why aren't you calling me?
Why are you twitching? Stop it. God, I'm feeling very attacked right now.
I've been waiting.
I'm very vulnerable.
Oh, no. Shit. I realized that I was like in half shadow and I was like, let me turn on the other light that I typically turn on. And I tipped it off of the table.
That's what you get. Ha ha. Like the sinister face that just pops in from the shadows. No, yeah, that you look a lot more milder now than you did like two seconds ago. Wow. Ooh, I was wondering why I felt triggered. Now I see why. I'm like, boy.
Yeah, I looked like one of those people.
You want to be pissed and have a serious conversation. Turn off that light and do that again. Whatever you want, fine. You can have it.
Who's like, my identity will be disguised. No one will know who it is.
Oh, the Jekyll and Hyde of it all. Your alter persona in dark light.
My mom was like, I don't understand those people. They get all like dark and they get silhouetted and they're like, their identity has been disguised. You know, we can recognize their voice, right? You know that. And like every time I do anything recorded, I'm like, I know that my mom, if she ever hears this, she will know it's me. She will know it's me. Hey, Miss Tamara, do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. I said this last week and I will say it again. I love this movie because it's one of the few movies, well, not too few, movies that Corinne and I saw at the Parkway in Oakland. Love that movie theater, comfy couches, Barca loungers, food, tasty food that they came and served to you, and beer. And of course, they had this movie, which was an absolute delight. So for our August of Change, as an homage to my bestie who took me to go see it, I wanted to recap it with her. And here's my synopsis.
Ooh.
Juno McGuff, a witty, outspoken 16-year-old, is living her normal life until she decides to go live with Polly Bleeker, a.k.a. becomes sexually active. The deed is fantastic, but leaves her with a small, teeny tiny case of pregnancy.
Ah.
Being a pregnant teen in her small town is not common, and Juno has to navigate her choices, including her ongoing feelings for Bleeker, the baby daddy, and what to do with the child she is fully ill-equipped to raise. She eventually finds the perfect couple. I am using strong quotation marks here. Perfect, quote, couple, quote, quote, quote. To adopt her unborn child until a series of events leads her to realize that the perfect facade sometimes hides situations that are as complicated as her own. what will Juno do? Will her circumstances become bleaker and bleaker? Or will her and bleaker wind up raising the child together? Find out with us as we recap Juno. I have one fun fact because IMDb was good to me today.
Sure.
That J.K. Simmons plays Juno's dad, Mac, and I absolutely love him because of this movie and because of his Oscar-winning performance in Whiplash. And J.K. Simmons was so impressed with the script of Juno that he would have been happy taking any of the unscripted parts, including one of the teachers that just sat in the background and didn't say anything. So I thought that was really cool because I enjoyed this movie and he enjoyed this movie and I enjoy him.
Aww.
Shall we dive into Juno, Corinne?
Why, yes, I am ready. I have the script so that I can open the movie and everything. Ta-da! I did my work.
I just have to say that I realized when I bought it on Amazon Prime, I have it on DVD, but I couldn't find the cord for my goddamn DVD player for the longest time. So I'm like, screw it. I just get to rent it again. It's fucking fine. And I rented it. And I so appreciated that when you pause it on Prime Video, you get all those fun facts and little trivia tidbits on the side.
Yeah.
And now I almost wish I bought it so I could go back and just read all of the commentary that plays throughout the movie.
I know. That's how I got the name of the car that the guy was driving in Clueless, because they said it on the side. And
shut your face. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I guess I don't
good
know
to know now.
I don't know anything about cars. But, like, I pause it and they're like, you see that cute little car he's got? It's a blah 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 for blah blah blah. And I was like, writing this down. Click, 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 click.
I know. I was like, I remember being impressed too. And I was like, well, you know, Corinne just knows some obscure random things. So that must be one of them.
Nah, I know how to read. That's what helped me out.
What?
Yeah.
That's helpful in a podcast now, isn't it?
Reading
and writing.
Fundamental. We open with Autumn. Not a sexy lady. Autumn. But the season. One might call it fall.
You can't say autumn like that and not obviously have us picture a sexy woman right off the bat.
Yeah, you know.
You could say autumn or, oh no, it's hard not to say autumn sexy. I'm sorry. Yeah, please continue.
I know.
Autumn. How many different ways can we say autumn?
Juno stands on the sidewalk in front of a Barca lounger and she narrates, it all started with a chair. And the Barca lounger she's looking at bears a strikingly. Oh, you know what? I know that for most gentle listeners, this does not need to be clarified. But I will clarify this at the beginning of the movie because just for clarity's sake. So Juno is played by Elliot Page. But at the time when the character Juno was being played by Elliot Page in this movie, Elliot Page was identifying himself as Ellen Page. So if I refer to the actor Elliot Page and I refer to him in regards to talking about Elliot Page, but also Juno, that would be why. But the character Juno is a woman in this, or female teenager in this movie. So obviously Juno in this movie is a she regardless. Oh, gender. Juno stands on the sidewalk in front of a Barca lounger and she narrates, it all started with a chair. And the Barca lounger she's looking at bears a striking resemblance to the Barca lounger she's now thinking about, the one that a naked Polly Bleeker was sitting in on the day she straddled his lap, underpantless, and they had sex for the first time. Polly earnestly whispers, I've been wanting this for a long time. And Juno says unromantically, I know.
Hot.
Yeah. She climbs on. And I'm guessing Polly just about immediately comes, because shortly thereafter, like seconds or a second thereafter, he whispers, wizard, which is his enthusiastic response to things. You have like this,
wow.
Ooh, look on your face.
I don't remember the wizard part.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do I have a phrase that I say? What do I say? No, I don't.
Probably not wizard.
No. Now I think I need a word, though. Now I'm going to contemplate. I'm not going to do it while we're recording, but I'm going to think long and hard about that. She said long and hard. And then come up with the word.
I can't wait for the next episode when it's revealed what your orgasm horn is going to be, I'm very excited about this. I watched the beginning of this movie so many times trying to figure out what was going on. Like, where was the Barca Lounger? What was going on with that? I had to watch the opening of this movie several times to figure out exactly what was going on. So,
oh, that's probably how you caught the wizard and yes, I did not.
Exactly.
Because I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I've seen this. It's fine.
No, I watched the beginning part like 3 to 5 times. If I had just been watching the movie to enjoy it, I would not have felt the need to, you know, because there's things that you can just write off. But when you're kind of trying to paint the picture, explain what's going on, then you need to have more of like a clear picture of what's going on. And yeah, took me a while. My brain hamster was like slowly clawing its way on that wheel. It was not working well for this movie, apparently. So we're back in present in the present day as Juno swigs from a giant Sunny D container and marvels at the most magnificent living room set she has ever seen. The Barca Lounger, along with other accoutrements, sit on Miss Rancic's front lawn, asking, nay, begging, for a new home. And then we cue one of the most awesome opening sequences ever. And I would sing some of the opening sequence, but I don't remember the melody. Where an almost animated Juno walks through a sketch drawing of her town to get to her ultimate destination, the convenience store, where she's getting her third pregnancy test. Rolo.
No.
I know. That was like my third COVID test when I was like, Adolfo's like, do another one, do another one. I'm like,
Oh, I've had some pregnancy scares back in my teens where I peed on a stick and I was like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, thank you, God, and made all those promises. If you just make me not pregnant, I swear to God, I will do anything that you want for the rest of my life. Sorry, God.
Next moment. Oh, you're negative. Line of cocaine later. All right. Yeah. Feeling good. Feeling good.
Well, I'm not pregnant, so it's not bad for the baby. No. Shit.
And this is the good stuff, so I'm good. No.
Yeah, and also I never done cocaine in my life. Yeah. Just aside.
To clarify, actually not trying to insinuate that Tam has done cocaine.
At least not while she's pregnant.
Rolo, who is played by Rainn Wilson, very memorably. He made a meal out of that role, I gotta say.
I wonder if he had the same like sentiment as J.K. Simmons, because his role was very small and fucking amazing. Uh-huh. And I wonder if he's just like, I just want to be in it. I don't care. Like, in any capacity. And he just like, bam, brought it.
Yeah. Rolo, who is working behind the counter, gives Juno a hard time. Juno swears the test is defective and Rolo insists, your ego is prego. No doubt about it, Mama Bear. Juno is indignant. Silencio, old man. I just drank my weight in Sunny D and now I've got to go. Give me the key. She goes to the convenience store bathroom and then returns to the front of the store and pays for the test. It's a positive sign. She's not happy, but resigned. Juno goes back home and tries hanging herself in the front yard with the licorice rope she just bought, but it's uncomfortable, so she stops and goes into the house. Juno calls her bestie Leah on her cheeseburger phone and lets her know she's pregnant. Did you also notice that Polly Bleeker has a cheeseburger phone as well?
No. Does he? The yeah. Cheeseburger buddies? Gosh, yes. Darn it.
Ooh, cheeseburger buddies. Aww. Juno and Polly are totally cheeseburger buddies. Oh, that's sweet. Leah asks her, are you going to Havenbrook or Women Now? Juno says, Women Now, because it's for women now. But before she does that, she needs Leah's help. Juno and Leah move the Barca Lounger that Juno had been staring at earlier in the movie into the back of Juno's minivan. Leah asks Juno, it took me forever to figure out, like, the Barca Lounger provenance and story, where it all was going, what all was happening with it.
Mm.
Juno and Leah move the Barca lounger that Juno had been staring at earlier in the movie into the back of Juno's minivan. Leah asks Juno when she figured out she was going to do it with Polly Bleeker. And Juno says, a year ago in Spanish class. And then in the movie, she gets handed some kind of a note that has like stickers and maybe says like hola on it or something like that. But I wasn't exactly sure what all was going on there, but
it was in their Spanish class, and he drew her a postcard that said greetings from Barcelona, and it was probably much in line with the letters that we used to write back and forth with all the graphic design early on and art, because it looked like there was a lot of crayon, there's a lot of colored pencils, and she was probably very touched by it.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I appreciate you filling in that piece of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Juno says that humping Bleak's bod was magnificent. And from everything I saw from their dramatic moment, I'd say, huh, to that.
Yeah.
For a couple seconds. It was easily the most passionless sex that I've ever seen.
Maybe they went again after Wizard.
Maybe. It was like, if Hallmark was going to show sex, that's what it would look like.
Maybe they were just showing the very mild, the G-rated one. Maybe the Wizarding World of Bleeker opened up. They got really kinky. They brought in some accessories. The second go-round, he lasted longer than a couple of seconds, perhaps.
Oh.
The hotness, quote unquote, that is Polly Bleeker unfolds in front of us as he gets ready in the morning and dons his very 80s jogging apparel, a golden headband and wristbands, a burgundy school shirt, and very, very small gold shorts. Coupled with the perfect breakfast accessory, the Hot Pocket, he goes out his front door to find Juno, who has masterfully arranged a full living room set on his front yard, complete with the Barca lounger that we mentioned before, wood-burning stove, and an embroidered tiger carpet.
Ooh.
She greets him from the armchair, sucking on the tip of a tobacco pipe. Bleeker's impressed with her decorating skills and compliments the tiger rug. He looks really proud, he says, smiling at his crush. But she's about to crush him with the news. So, guess what? She says nonchalantly. I'm pregnant. Polly's face falls as a bevy of cross-country runners pass by. Juno takes a moment to voice over her thoughts. Every time those runners pass by, all I can do is picture them naked and see their pork swords. Did that need to be mentioned? Yes, because I really wanted to say pork swords and will forever implement that word into my vocabulary. Pork swords, pork swords, pork swords.
Since you mentioned it, can I tell you, as a grown-ass adult, having like the close-up shot on the slow-mo like crotches of high school boys in short shorts was a little uncomfortable for me. I was like, no, just back away. No.
Yes, same. So glad that tiny teeny shorts are out of style now, because that's just too close for comfort. I'm like, they're bouncing around too much. They might come out the bottom too much. Then the camera pans away and I'm like, oh, thank God. Ooh, that was close. And back to the situation at hand. Poor Bleeker utters, what should we do? And Juno says she's just going to nip it in the butt, because in health class they learned that pregnancy generally leads to babies. Polly tells her he'll be okay with whatever she wants to do, and she leaves, obviously disappointed in his reaction, and calls out, we both know sex wasn't your idea, as she leaves. He stammers, Hot Pocket still in hand, then whose idea was it?
We all know it was Juno.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, absolutely. That day after school, Juno gets on her hamburger phone to procure a hasty abortion from Women Now. She answers the obligatory questions until the last, when they ask, how long have you been sexually active? She hates this question. What does that even mean? She wonders. Do I deactivate someday, or is this some permanent state of being? She knows that Bleeker, quote unquote, went live that night because of the holy shit, holy shit, holy shit look on his face and how Corinne told us he said wizard.
Yes.
Then we are whisked downstairs to meet Juno's unusual but charming as fuck family. Her dad is an HVAC repairman who's married to Bren, Juno's stepmom, who owns a nail salon called Bren's Tens, always smells like chemicals, and is obsessed with dogs. They have a daughter together named Liberty Bell. What a name, am I right?
Yes.
Juno's real mom lives on a reservation with her new husband and three replacement kids, and inexplicably sends Juno a cactus every Valentine's Day, because every 16-year-old needs multiple cactuses in their life. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mac, Juno's pop, asks her how her maneuver went last night. He was privy to the lawn recon redecorating mission and was cool with it. What a fucking guy. Yeah. How many parents do you know that would be cool with something like that?
My dad probably would. My mom absolutely would not.
But would your dad be cool with it? And then the next day over a meal, say like, how was the maneuver last night? Or would he just be like, yeah, you did that. That's fine.
He would if we were raised in a slightly different family culture where I would have actually mentioned that I was going to be doing that. Sure. Yes.
Uh-huh. If your mom wasn't around.
Yeah. Yeah.
AKA if mama wasn't there.
Yes.
Got it. Juno admits that her maneuver went very well and possibly just as successful as her downing a 64-ounce blue Slurpee in under 10 minutes. Bren asks, did you puke in my urn by the door? Because she found some blue shit in it. She looks at Liberty Bell, who's like 7, and corrects herself. Gunk. I mean, I found some gunk in the urn. But Liberty Bell is oblivious because she's showering her baked potato with bacon bits. Juno denies the accusation, and Max says sweetly, Liberty Bell, you put one more bacon bit on that potato and I'm going to kick your monkey butt. I really want to be part of this family. That last part was me, not what her dad said. The next day, Juno goes to Women Now, and there is a lone protester outside holding a sign and chanting, "Aw, babies want to get born!" It's Soo Chin, Juno's classmate. "Hey, Soo Chin," Juno says, "you finish your paper for class?" Soo shyly shakes her head and says, "she tried, but is having a hard time concentrating." "Oh," Juno offers, "I can sell you some of my Adderall." But Soo Chin is off pills. "Oh, probably for the best." Juno regales her with a girl that took too many pharmaceuticals, ripped off her clothes, and acted like a kraken in the mall fountain. Soo Chin, after hearing this deadpan, states, "I heard that was you, Juno." And it was. And she, either embarrassed for being outed for the overly drugged rendition of events, or just bored with the conversation, heads into Women Now for her procedure. But Soo needs to relay her message and yells after her, "Your baby has a heartbeat! It can feel pain! And it has fingernails!" The last bit causes Juno to turn around and chuckle. "Fingernails? Really?" she says, and continues on into the clinic undeterred.
And I believe fingernails actually come around about 3 months in, not as early as that, but you know, meh.
I hate to say it, but honestly, people that are against abortion sometimes use really devious tactics to get people to, you know, like second guess their choices. Like,
yeah.
I remember they don't call them like, they're not abortion clinics, but they call them like some other clinics that sound very much like, oh, you can get abortions here. I forgot what the hell
they're
called.
They're like family planning clinics or, you know, whatever.
Yes, yeah. Family planning clinics. Exactly. Like, you're going to have this baby bitch whether you like it or not. Yeah. Family planning clinics. And this undercover reporter infiltrated one to see what they actually were offering and the advice that they gave to pregnant women that went in there. She acted as a pregnant woman. Mm-hmm. The woman took out a box that had a baby, like a little teeny tiny fetus that was probably a few months along, and was like, "You don't want to get an abortion or have a miscarriage because do you really want to go to the bathroom one day and find this in your underwear?" And I'm like, what the? Wow. Like, they tell people that, like, as a scare tactic, which is not even remotely true. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it doesn't surprise me that Soo Chin was over there touting that she has fingernails, even though she's probably only a few weeks along. Oh, nope, 2 months.
2 months, yeah. Oh, and gentle listeners, beware. There's just a mother and daughter who got arrested because of their conversations on Facebook Messenger around getting the getting abortion pills. So when they say to be careful about the kind of communications that you have digitally with people, be careful about the kind of communications that you have digitally with people, because it can be subpoenaed and used against you for various reasons. Good times. Facebook, a.k.a. Meta, released those, and ta-da! There they are, arrested over that business. Ridiculousness.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So, things are looking great for women and also people who are able to bear children's civil liberties. Yay! Pam's really enthusiastic. She's about ready to break out the party poppers and the confetti.
Yay!
There we go. In the Women Now clinic... Excuse me, in the Women Now clinic, the receptionist is playing her DS and drones, "Welcome to Women Now, where women are trusted friends. Please put your hands where I can see them and surrender any bombs." She offers Juno a boysenberry-flavored condom that will make the man's junk smell like pie and gives her paperwork to fill out. Juno sits down to fill out her paperwork, starts internally freaking out in the waiting room, and dashes out the clinic. Su Chin yells after her, God appreciates your miracle. Juno goes to Leah's house, and Leah is... I don't know why I'm having a hard time with Leah's name. Juno goes to Leah's house, and Leah is surprised. I keep on calling her Leo, and I'm like, no, not DiCaprio. Leah is surprised as she was supposed to pick Juno up at 4. Juno babbles on how the whole thing was unsettling and she couldn't do it, plus fetuses have fingernails. Leah is impressed at the gory image of a fetus using its nails to claw out of the vajay and suggests that if Juno is interested in adoption, she should look at the Penny Saver. They have ads for desperately seeking spawn.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that's true. Now I need to get a Penny Saver stat.
I know. I'm like, where does one even find a Penny Saver these days?
Maybe they morphed it into a classify ad situation.
Nice leaving off the D. Good job there.
Yeah.
In the park, Juno and Leah peruse ads. But Juno isn't impressed by the ads. She wants 30-something hipster parents. Just then, Leah says, hey, look at them. And we get our first glance of Vanessa and Mark. Their ad has a photo of the two of them looking preppy and beautiful. And Vanessa and Mark are played by
Jennifer Gardner and
Jason Bateman. Good teamwork makes the dream work moment there. Okay. Their ad has a photo of the two of them looking preppy and beautiful. It says, educated, successful couple wishes to adopt a child. We live in a suburban area near good schools and playgrounds. The child will be raised in a loving atmosphere full of laughter, learning, and teddy bears. Please call Vanessa and Mark. Juno sees the ad and knows they are the ones. Meanwhile, Polly hangs out and moons over Juno in his room, her underwear clutched in one hand and his yearbook open to her picture in the other. She wrote, hey, Bleak, spank off to this with motion lotion. Just kidding. Sort of. Your best friend, Juno. Totally brings me back to the, like, rando yearbook entries that we all would write in each other's yearbooks. He's interrupted from his reverie by a knock on the door. It's his mom, trying to get him to come downstairs for dinner, but he's not biting. She mentions that Juno called while he was out running and also mentions how she doesn't like Juno. He says, I know, and she leaves the room resigned. And Polly continues to look at Juno's yearbook pic.
Do you think that Polly's mom really legitimately does not like Juno, or if she's just one of those moms that nobody's good enough for my son?
I think that she legitimately doesn't like Juno because Juno's a little weird, and the way that she interacts with adults is a little off-putting. Like, and you see it when she meets up with the couple. And I would say that if I were a parent and I had a son and he were involved with a person who is going to leave an entire horrible living room set on my front lawn, I wouldn't be super thrilled about it. I'd just be like, oh, fuck.
Oh.
I don't know. I think she's doing the best she can. What do you think?
Adult self loves the shit out of her, but adult self does not have any kids. So I can't say if my feelings would change if, you know, I had somebody that was going to be associating with her that was her age. I don't know. But I would like to hope that I would appreciate her quirkiness and her forwardness, but
no, I agree. But she has kind of like a smarmy vibe to her. She kind of has like that Eddie Haskell, like, well, how are you doing there kind of thing going on when she interacts with adults.
I would appreciate the furniture maneuver on my front. I'd probably be like, what the fuck? This girl moved all this furniture here in the front yard. She really likes you.
And I mean, in some ways, I would kind of get a kick out of it. And I would also be like, and you know, you're going to need to move that.
I'm going to be like, and Polly, since this was your doing, because you elicited these feelings inside this girl, you get to call the towway service and facilitate getting this off the lawn. And if you can't do it, then you got to better get her to do it because I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, why I don't have any kids. Putting it on my 16-year-old imaginary son. You better move that furniture if you know it's good for you.
I'd put it all on Juno. Be like, you got to move it. You put it there. You got to take it away. But I think Juno is like a cool, interesting kid. Don't get me wrong. Back at Juno's home, Juno paces around the living room in front of her dad and Brenda as Leah sits off to the side for moral support. Both parents want to know what's up. And Brenda asks, did you get expelled? Dad asks, oh my gosh. And Brenda is played by Allison Janney, who is awesome. And one of my favorite roles of hers was when she was the principal in Easy A.
That was a good one.
Dad asks if she needs money or legal counsel. Juno says, no, I just don't want anyone to hit me. And let's be very clear, the tone of this movie is not that she is in an abusive household at all. Dad and Brenda roll their eyes, and Leah tells her to just do it. Juno announces that she's pregnant. But don't worry, I've got it all taken care of. I'm giving the baby up for adoption, and the couple is paying for the medical expenses and everything. When Dad finds out the father is Polly Bleeker, he's incredulous. And Leah agrees. I know, right? Juno isn't thrilled about their criticism of Polly. Brenda's reaction? She is on it. She's getting the prenatal vitamins and the appointments together. She has a plan. Dad says he's going to the appointment with the prospective parents. He doesn't want his daughter being taken advantage of. And I am very glad that he is going with her because that'd be weird if she went on her own. That's good parenting right there. Man, I totally agree with you. His role as the dad in this movie is, perfection. He's a good one.
Both him and Allison Janney. That's why I'm like, yeah. I love you both.
Yeah.
In your acting lives and in this character role, like, I just want to be your kid. Even though we're probably not far. No, maybe. How old are they?
Oh my gosh, we need to find that out right now. Just a second. Age. We're pretty good. It's not perfect, but Allison Janney is 62, and so she would have been like 18, 17. Yeah. And
very Juno of her.
Yeah. And what's that guy's name?
J.K. Simmons.
Thank you. And he's 67, so he would have been
like in the clear.
22. Yeah. So other than him being a little bit of a creeper on Allison Janney, if they were to have us as children, it's all good. It's all good.
I was about to say the same thing. I'm like, JK, come on, man. 17-year-olds, stay away.
Stay away.
And how the fuck would that even work? Because we were both born in 76, but June and October. So either like you were holding on for dear life and not wanting to be born, or we are the weirdest set of twins you've ever seen in your life.
You know, I wouldn't put it past me to hold on for dear life and just be like, I'm not coming out of here. My mom said that if she had been taller, I would have been hiding behind her legs well into much later years of my life. Man, adults are scary. They're all like, you're so pretty. Hi, how are you doing? And I'm all, back away, stranger danger. Yeah.
After Juno and Leah retreat upstairs, Brenda and Pop reflect. Is it my fault? Mac asks. And Brenda assures him that kids get bored and have sex, have since the beginning of time, and Lord knows I have done it. How about you, Corinne?
Yes, much to the chagrin of my mom, who wanted me to remain a virgin until I was married. So far, I haven't gotten married. I would be a very old, very frustrated virgin if I had waited. Just FYI.
Daddy Mac asks, did you see that coming? And Brenda nods. Of course I did, but I was hoping she got expelled or was into hard drugs. Pop nods reflectively. I am not ready to be a pop, he admits. Brenda grabs his hand and says, you're not. Someone else is going to get a precious gift from heaven out of this dumpster fire. He sits thoughtfully for a moment and blurts, I'm going to punch that Polly kid in the wiener next time I see him. And Brenda gives him a look. Come on. You know that wasn't his idea. And they both nod knowingly. A few days later, Juno and her father drive through the Glacial Valley housing community, which is filled with very beige McMansions. They get to Mark and Vanessa's house, a very similar McMansion to the rest of them, and Vanessa answers the door. Mac thanks her for inviting him and his irresponsible daughter into their home. She seems a little tightly wound and introduces herself a few times. Juno compliments her ad in the Penny Saver. Very classy photo, she announces. Not like those people in front of fake forests. Honestly, who do they think they're fooling? Vanessa's very surprised that that's how Juno found them, but brushes them off and brings them inside, introduces them to the lawyer and Mark, and offers everyone a drink. Without missing a beat, Juno asks for a Maker's Mark up. Vanessa gets a shocked expression until her dad explains that Juno's kidding and has a great sense of humor, only one of many of her genetic gifts. They get down to the business of adoption. Gerda, the lawyer, asks how far along Juno is, and she mistakenly answers, "Oh, I'm a junior." Oh, shoot, you mean the pregnancy. Oh, yes. She's 12 weeks, and Vanessa gets really excited. She knows exactly what stage Juno's going through and how the first months are the hardest. Juno thoughtlessly says, "Well, be glad you're not going through it." And Vanessa crumbles a little bit. Mark, sensing the tension, tries to jump in and asks how they're going to do it. Juno wants closed adoption, like kicking it old school, just pushing the basket through the reeds. Mark jumps in with a smirk and says, "Oh, technically that's kicking it Old Testament." And Juno chuckles. They seem to have the same sense of humor. So their adoption will be closed, and the adoptees assure Juno that they will be paying for all her medical expenses, and would she be needing any other compensation? A heaviness hangs in the air as Juno and her pop look at the host confused. "Excuse me? No, we don't want any money," they tell him. Juno just wants the baby to go to a good home. She knows she's ill-equipped, being young and still in school. This seems to ease Vanessa's mind, and she relaxes and explains how she's always wanted to be a mom her whole life. "Some people were just born to be something. Have you ever felt that?" she asked Mr. McGuff. And he nods sagely and says, "Yes, yes, heating and air conditioning." Juno asks Mark if he's excited to be a dad, and he gives a clunky answer about coaching and the soccer team and helping with the science fairs and whatnot. And this all seems very mundane to Juno, who gets antsy and asks to use the bathroom because pregnancy makes her piss like a racehorse. Vanessa directs her to the one upstairs. The downstairs one is being retiled. Juno beelines it up there, pauses to snicker at the series of photos the couple has professionally taken, which shows them all in white against a white background and looks very similar to a toothpaste ad.
There are turtlenecks involved. It is a lot. It is a lot.
It is white on white on white. It's Caucasian people in white sweatshirts on white backgrounds.
If only they were blonde, then people would just be like, "Why do you have these white squares up on your wall?"
Once she finds the bathroom, she immediately starts going through their toiletries, sampling face cream, squirting some perfume. She must have been gone too long for comfort, because as she comes through the bathroom door, there is Mark, asking if she's okay. She accuses him of spying on her, and he retorts, "Is that what we look like, a couple of paranoid yuppies?" "Yes, yes, you do, Mark." She shoves her wrist under his nose and admits that she stole a squirt of his wife's perfume called Happy. He takes a suspicious whiff and asks, "Is that supposed to make me happy?" Juno turns tail and chastises him. "You should be happy, Holmes. I'm giving you the gift of life. Crying, smelly, pooping life." She's almost to the top of the stairs when she spies a guitar gleaming in the doorway of the next room. "Is that a Les Paul?" she asks excitedly. "It is. And that room is where Vanessa lets Mark keep all his stuff." "Wow," Juno comments. "A whole room for all your stuff in your own house? She's keeping you on a short leash, Mark." They go into the room and riff around on the guitars, argue about when the greatest time was in music history. Him in the early 90s, her the late 70s. And they play some Hole, which is a band headed by Courtney Love, for all you youngsters out there that might not recognize the name. Vanessa, still downstairs, hears the commotion and heads upstairs in a huff. In a huff! She tells Mark and Juno that there's a shit ton of paperwork and things they still need to go over. The two make their sad way back downstairs and handle the business at hand. Once the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, Vanessa asks if they could keep them updated on the baby, sonograms, doctor visits, etc. Juno and her pop assure her that they will and head out. Vanessa, still feeling apprehensive, asks how sure Juno is about giving up the baby. Juno thinks for a moment and says confidently, about 104%. If she could, she would just hand over the baby that day, but it probably looks a little bit like a sea monkey, and she should probably cook it a little longer and make it a little cuter for them. And they are off. Baby given, deal done.
I love how at one point Juno's dad mentions Tony Little, and it totally brought me back to those infomercials with the gazelle mm-hmm. and this very short, yeah. very muscular man with a blonde curly mullet exercising away on the on his exercise machine.
Yeah, while they're waiting for Mark and Juno playing the guitar, he's noticing all the exercise equipment that Vanessa has tucked away in the corners of the living room and says that, oh, I don't know what that is, but Brenda once got a gazelle thingy from that guy, Tony, that just doesn't look right to me.
The gazelle is like, I don't know, maybe it was $125 or something like at the top end. But a Pilates reformer, which is what she had, is like, I don't know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. I mean,
shocking that they'd have those different pieces of equipment in their respective homes.
I know. Well, and to compare the two together is like, it's me like being all, you see that Tesla of yours right over there? My Honda Fit? Like, we both have cars. Yeah.
How do you even know how much that Pilates machine costs?
I just looked it up. I just knew they were expensive.
I was going to say, I'm like, I have no fucking idea what a gazelle or a Pilates machine costs. Obviously, I work out a lot.
Gentle listeners, you should see the beautiful tribute shrine she has to Tony Little. It's very moving.
And it's quite scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little unnerving, some people say.
Yeah, I wonder why. You know, when I go out wearing my Richard Simmons shirt and you go out wearing your Tony Little shirt and we do it together, I mean, all eyes are on us, and I think it's obvious because we are so fucking hot.
Oh my God, there's got to be a story somewhere in there. Tony Little and Richard Simmons as friends. Oh my God, oh my God.
Oh, that would be so good. Now, the season has changed. Winter, 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 winter. After school, Juno goes to her ultrasound appointment with stepmom Brenda and bestie Leah. Juno's very pregnant belly is exposed and ultrasound gel gets unceremoniously glopped onto it. And I looked up ultrasound gel to see what it was called, and it's called ultrasound gel.
Oh.
I was like, what do you call
That's it, huh?
ultrasound gel? And it was like, ultrasound gel?
Gelée. Ultrasound gelée.
Ooh, so fancy. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
The ultrasound tech points out the different vague features and then asks Juno if she'd like to know the sex of the baby. Brenda and Leah's faces light up. Yeah! But Juno quickly shuts that shit down. I'm thinking no. I'd like it to be a surprise for Mark and Vanessa. When the ultrasound tech finds out that she's giving up her baby for adoption, she sighs in relief. Thank goodness. And Brenda gets a fuck you very much look mm-hmm. in her eyes. She says, why would you say that? The tech explains that teen mothers create a toxic environment for their children. All three of them are pissed. Juno and Leah are like, what if they end up being serial killers? And where do you get off calling me toxic? And Brenda says, maybe they'll be utterly negligent and do a far worse job than my dumbass stepdaughter would. Brenda demands, what's your job? The woman responds, I'm an ultrasound tech. Brenda, breaking out the can of whoop-ass, says, I'm a nail tech, and maybe we should all stick to our jobs. My five-year-old, who isn't the brightest bulb. So, Liberty Bell, I originally was like, is she seven? Turns out she's five. Brenda probably knows, and I didn't change it up top, so sorry, my bad. My five-year-old, who isn't the brightest bulb, could do your job, so maybe you should keep your observations to yourself. Juno is impressed at Brenda laying down the smack.
I love that part.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
I also just think that Juno has wildly underestimated Brenda and, like, the kind of person that she is. And I think in that moment, mm-hmm. she gets to see the side of her and be like, oh.
This is a little bit of the mama bear that I don't see because you're my stepmom and I refuse to.
Mm-hmm. What does Juno do after getting a sonogram? Well, drive over to see Mark and Vanessa. Juno knocks on the door and only Mark is home. He works from home writing commercial jingles. Titanium power, get more snatch by the batch. Just one of his riveting commercial jingles that bought their kitchen. And Vanessa is working late. Juno shows him the sonogram and he's like, wow, a sonogram. Mark hears a song he likes, a Carpenter's cover by Sonic Youth, and they start talking music. He says, oh, I gotta make you some mixes. And then they debate horror movie folk Dario Argento versus Herschel Gordon Lewis. They watch a horror movie together, and Mark is vibing with Juno, and Juno is kind of wondering what he's doing with a drag like Vanessa. Vanessa comes home, and Juno shares the ultrasound pic with her. Vanessa is completely enchanted, and then Juno notices all the stuff she got for the baby, and it's revealed that they had a previous opportunity to have a kid, but the parent ended up backing out. Juno assures Vanessa that she's in it to win it. Mm.
Juno comes back home from Vanessa and Mark's and has a gallon-sized cup of Slurpee. She walks in the door to find Brenda, her stepmom, cutting out photos of dogs, and she is not happy. "Where have you been?" she asks accusingly. Juno tells her that she dropped off the ultrasound for Mark and Vanessa. "Why in the world would you drive out to East Jesus Nowhere?" Brenda accuses, "instead of just putting it in the mail." Juno, unflustered, explains that they wanted her to give them updates. So she just cruised on over there and hung out with Mark, and he made her some CDs, and they watched some gory movies. Her stepmom is livid that she spent so much time with a married man when his wife wasn't home. Juno tries to assure her that it's fine, but Brenda, older and wiser, knows there's a different dynamic in marriage that Juno doesn't understand. Then Juno starts getting defensive. "You act like you're the one that has to go through this and get huge and push a baby out of your vag for somebody else. And why are you cutting out dog pictures? We don't even have a dog." Now Brenda's defensive. "I can't have dogs because you're allergic to the saliva. But as soon as you move out in a few years, I'm getting Weimaraners." Juno sneers at her stepmother and shrieks, "Oh, dream big!" Oh. Turns tail, goes straight to the urn by the door, and dumps the remainder of her blue Slurpee in it because she did puke in it the first time, even though she denied it.
Mm-hmm.
Then she drives off in a huff, to visit Bleeker. His mom answers the door when she knocks, and Juno explains in a voiceover that Polly's mother might have possibly been beautiful at one time, but now she looks like a troll. And this troll is manning the door and glaring at Juno as if she's a persona non grata. Juno pushes past her and runs up the stairs with Mom in hot pursuit, but she gets to Polly's room first and closes the door in his mother's face. She finds him on the floor doing homework, and he seems genuinely glad to see her, but is curious as to why she's there. Juno explains that she misses hanging out with him on school nights and eases herself down onto the beanbag chair opposite of him. He smiles at her protruding belly and comments, "So you're looking more pregnanter these days." And she regales him about the adoption, how she hung out with Mark all afternoon, and how her parents won't narc on him about him being the one getting her pregnant. Polly appreciates the discretion and asks if hanging out with the adopted dad is normal. She admits probably not, looks down at her belly, and remarks that she's probably going to get huge and look like a big dork soon. "Will you still think I'm cute?" she asks him. Polly smiles shyly at the floor. "I always think you're cute," he says. "Well, I think you're beautiful." She looks down and realizes she still has feelings for him.
Aww.
But he interrupts her thoughts by saying, "When all this is over, we can get the band back together." And, he adds, "maybe we can get back together." She looks confused. "When exactly were we together?" she asks. And he stammers, "Well, there's that one time." Juno, possibly out of self-protection, answers, "You should go out with Katrina DeVore. You can totally go out with her."
Mm-hmm.
This frustrates Polly, and he argues that he doesn't want to go out with Katrina. He doesn't like her, and she smells like soup. And they sit there in an uncomfortable silence.
Mm. Back at Vanessa and Mark's house, Vanessa has painted swatches of custard and cheesecake on the wall. But Mark says they're yellow, and the bright butter yellow swatches look virtually identical. Mark shames her for working on the baby's room. "You could wait a few months. It's not like the baby is going to come storming in here demanding dessert-colored walls." And she explains that she's nesting. He minimizes her statement, joking, "What, are you going to make a crib out of sticks and spit?" And Vanessa suggests that he read the daddy chapters that she flagged in What to Expect When You're Expecting. She turns to the opposite wall and says that it needs something, maybe their first family photo. And Mark is silent, stoic, nonplussed.
How in the world did these two wind up together? They seem so different.
Well, I mean, I think that she was probably a little more like, yeah, let's go to the club and hang out. You know, let's see this indie music person, blah, blah, blah. But she always had her child vision. And then when they got married, and she was open about it. And when they got married, he was very much like, yeah, but I want to stay out all night, like going to shows and different things like that. And she was going down a different path. And I think they just sort of ended up parting the ways. But so, yeah. Silent, stoic, nonplussed. Because I think we're at the pinnacle of their difference at this moment when we see them. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm sorry. Like, Juno throws shade at him for having a room to put his stuff. And it's like, you know, no, he gets his own fucking music room. Are you kidding me? That's awesome. Like, you know,
I don't think it's that. I think that he doesn't have a much representation in the rest of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that David, my roommate, he has a shot glass collection.
Yeah.
And when we were putting all the stuff out, most of the stuff came from Bridget and me. And so I was like, what would you like in this living room? That's going to be something that's yours. And he's like, my shot glass collection. Yeah. I'm like, okay, not my first choice, but
yeah.
You know, far be it from me from keeping everybody from thinking we're alcoholics once they walk in the door, whatever. But so it's just like, you know, I almost feel like this is your house too, and you should be represented in a way. And I understand, like, some people are like, it's got to be completely, like, designed to a certain aesthetic, and stuff has to be all the same color of beige and blah, blah, blah. And that just doesn't vibe with me. Like, even if they did decorate the house in a certain way, like, at least have some sort of you both in there and not just have it a whitewashed decorator's vision of what your house should look like. Yeah. Which I think is what Vanessa did. And Mark was like, I want a guitar on the wall. And she's like, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Yeah. I do totally think that it could have been integrated better into the house. I completely agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And I am not defending him. Lord knows I'm not. I'm just saying, from the storyline up until this point, this is what I see.
Yes, absolutely. I know that you're a Mark defender. It's fine. It's cool.
No, you better take that. You take those words right out of your mouth.
Team Mark.
Mark my words. I'm going to kick your butt if you keep saying that.
So, anyways, Leah.
So, we're calling it the Hallmark movie after Mark now, right?
Yeah,
not Hallmark movies? Because you're such a big fan? Yes? No?
What if we did only Hallmark movies and movies that had a Mark in them?
I love it. Mark Hamill, we're coming for you. Oh, wait. Mark Harmon. What other Marks are there? Could be actors or characters named Mark. Wow. We can go in all kinds of directions. This is a really bad idea.
Suddenly we're doing like horror movies and like
Mark Ruffalo.
Silent movies. Yes, he is an excellent choice. So Leo and Juno are at the mall fighting over a pretzel when suddenly they stop. And we'll find out why they stopped after the break. When we left off from the break, Leah and Juno were fighting over a pretzel when they suddenly stop. Juno sees Vanessa downstairs in the kids' play area. She's with a little girl and she's great with her. Juno's face softens. She's made the right choice. Leah doesn't notice Juno's emotional landscape and proclaims, I'm bored. And they move on. Later, they bump into Vanessa coming out of a store and Juno makes a comment about the baby kicking away. Vanessa gets a flash of sadness over her face and then nervously asks if she can feel. Juno exclaims, are you kidding? Grabs Vanessa's hand and plants it on her stomach, but Vanessa doesn't feel anything. It's not moving for me, and feels kind of rejected, but Juno encourages her to talk to the baby. Vanessa gets on her knees in the middle of the mall and talks softly to Juno's belly. Hi, baby. It's me. It's Vanessa. I can't wait to meet you. Can you hear me, baby? Sweet angel? Her eyes widen. That was magical. She felt the kicking. Juno looks at her adoringly.
Aww.
I know, it's so cute. One of the few tender scenes in that movie.
Yeah. The screen sketches the word spring as Polly's track team and their pork sausage penises run across the screen. Juno is indeed getting more pregnanter, so we see a montage of her stepmom adding the dreaded elastic band to her pants and her walking through the halls belly first, with students parting like the Red Sea as she goes by. At school on a payphone, she calls Mark, who's at home working on a commercial jingle. She wanted to tell him that she listened to the weird CD he made her, and he asks what the verdict is. She thought it was cute, but couldn't match the raw power of Iggy Pop. They talk rather intimately. Mark says he can't wait to see what she has to show him, and she jokes that he should stop surfing porn and get back to work. He chuckles softly and tells her to go learn something, and they both are smiling as they hang up the phones. Then it's lunchtime. Juno and Leah are in the cafeteria, and Juno's getting one of everything. That she complains about having to wear elastic clothes, and that she has to rub cocoa butter all over herself so her skin doesn't explode. They sit inside the trophy case, and Leah fills her in on the latest tea. Did you hear that Polly's going to the prom with Katrina? Juno refuses to hear it. He does not like her. She smells like soup. Leah laughs generously. Oh my God, it totally does. I went to her house 4 years ago for a birthday party, and it smelled like Lipton Landing. But men have endured worse for pussy. Besides, he slept with you. Juno takes the time between spoonfuls of lime jello to be offended. He slept with me because he trusted me. We're best friends. Leah nods. Sounds like somebody's jealous. And Juno denies this while Leah bites a fry and Snickers. I'm totally convinced. Juno beelines it across the school after finding this offending information and finds Polly sucking back some orange Tic Tacs in front of his locker and confronts him. Are you going to the prom with Katrina? He admits that he is and tells her the itinerary. Bunch of the track guys and I are going to Benihana's, then prom, then VJ's parents' cabin. Juno takes this information hard but doesn't say it and instead says, your mom must be really thrilled that you're not going to the prom with me. Polly stands there like a deer caught in headlights. He's not sure what to do. You're mad at me? He states. Why are you mad at me? I'm not mad, she says sarcastically. I'm in a great mood, besides the fact that I'm wearing a fat suit that I can't take off, and despite the fact that everyone is making fun of me behind my back, and Katrina, your little girlfriend, gave me the stink eye in art class. Polly argues that that's just her face, but Juno is not having any of it. Just take Soupy Sales to prom. I can think of infinitely better things to do, like pumice my feet, go to Brenda's Unitarian Church, get hit by a truck full of hot garbage juice. I said that because I still use the line hot garbage juice anytime I can. It's evident that Juno's hurt, that he didn't ask her to prom, and she gets vicious and starts saying even more meaner things about them having sex. He admits that he still has her underwear, and she says she still has his virginity. He scoffs at this, and she snarls. What are you embarrassed about that? Well, at least you don't have a 24-hour reminder of it under your shirt. I am a planet. She grabs her backpack in a huff. In a huff instead of my normal.
Way to add a little flavor to it. Nice.
And he tries to help her, but she refuses. What's another 10 pounds? She sneers and leaves him in the hallway, feeling guilty and confused. Juno, still hormonal, heated, and full of feelings, gets in her van and puts on gloss and heads over to Mark and Vanessa's, Mark's house. Mark's again home alone as per usual and smiles when her car pulls up. When she comes in, she asks if Vanessa's home and he says, no, we're safe. She hands him a stack of CDs and he says he has something for her. They head down to the basement where he has boxes of old comics and pulls one out. It shows an anime pregnant superhero called the Most Fruitful Yuki. Juno loves it and says it makes her feel like less of a fat dork. Mark assures her that Yuki was a badass and she should be proud to be in the same condition. Juno in turn hands him a CD to play and directs him to play Numero Trois. It's Mott the Hoople, All the Young Dudes, and she is surprised that Mark knows the song. Yeah, he admits, I danced to this at my senior prom. Who'd you dance with? She asks playfully. He smirks. Cynthia Vogel, great dance partner. She let me put my hands all over her. I can totally picture you dancing like a total dork. She moves in close, puts her arms on his waist, and starts swaying to the music. He takes her hands and says, actually, as he moves her hands to his shoulder and puts his on her waist, this is how we did it in 88. They sway for a little while before he asks, have you gone to any dances? And she scoffs, no, dances are for nerds and squares. And he counters, what are you? She admits that she doesn't know. He looks down at her pregnant belly and asks, do you feel like there's something between us? She chuckles and puts her head on his shoulder. They sway for a bit longer until he says, quietly, I'm leaving Vanessa. Juno rips out of his arms and gets upset. He tries to explain that it's something he's wanted for a while, but she is heartbroken because they were supposed to take care of her baby, and she doesn't want it coming from a stupid broken family like everyone else. Mark is confused and says he thought she would be cool with it, and asks how she sees him and why she's over there all the time. She answers in the most Juno way possible. I just want to be a piece of furniture in your weird life. Mark shakes his head. She couldn't possibly understand. He's been underground for too long, a person who doesn't even have stuff in his own house. And she accuses him of being an asshole and asks him to do her a huge solid and just not divorce Vanessa. He says she's so young and she leaves in a huff. In a huff! She's 16 after all. She knows stuff. Like how Sonic Youth is a shitty band. The music that he gave her the last time she was there. At the top of the stairs, she runs into Vanessa, who just got home. She sees Juno visibly upset and asks what's wrong. She tries to brush it off by saying she's just allergic to fine home furnishings. Mark comes up, too, and tells Vanessa that Juno's just being hormonal, but finally comes clean that he thinks they're not ready to be parents. All this is happening too fast. Vanessa argues that they have the books and have gone to the classes and they are prepared, but Mark adds, I'm not sure I'm ready. Being prepared is one thing. Being ready to be a parent is quite another. He goes on to say that the baby's been like a ticking clock, and Vanessa finally realizes that he's just not talking about the baby. He's also talking about them. He still has stuff he wants to do with his life, and Vanessa gives him a dose of reality. She tells him that he's never going to be Kurt Cobain. His shirt is stupid, and he needs to grow up. The argument is interrupted by Juno slamming the door. All this dysfunction and tragedy playing out in real time is too much for her to handle.
Oh, oof, 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 oof. And I do have one thing to say about the Mark and Vanessa furniture representation of him in the household stuff. He is a grown-ass adult. In a relationship, you have conversations about what you want to do in a household. And he could have had more of himself represented in that household if he had wanted to.
Fair, but seeing how Vanessa was with that, I mean, granted she was upset, but when she was like, your shirt is stupid, I'm like, that has nothing to do with the conversation at hand. Like, she's like, you're not going to be Kurt Cobain, give up your dreams. I'm like, he's actually a composer that's making money, you know, making music for commercials, and I'm just like, go ahead. Sorry. That's all I have to say about that.
I feel like a lot of times women are blamed for this kind of stuff where it's like, no, he has a voice. He can have a presence in the household. And while I do think that she got personal on him, absolutely. And I don't think that that is a great thing to do in a fight. I think she's just putting things together and being like, oh my gosh, the fact that he seems to be having a midlife crisis at this moment, being like, oh, forget about it. I can't have a family. I need to like go off and wander and be footloose and fancy free and have my Peter Pan complex.
That's fine, but I highly doubt he all of a sudden started wearing concert t-shirts, being the person that I think that he is, and they're trying to portray him in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would imagine that being like somebody saying, Corinne, your character tees are stupid. I'd be like, oh, don't say that about Corinne. Like, that's like your representation and attacking your style choices. And that coupled with how she was acting and how he was being with his stuff makes me think that it might have been a little bit more intense, especially in that one montage when they were first going over to Vanessa and Mark's house. We didn't mention it, but there was her like straightening the towels ever so slightly so that they were even, and putting the white hydrangeas in a vase and blah, blah, blah. Like, all the stuff that Juno and her dad probably wouldn't care about. And I know it's her putting her best foot forward, but she seemed a little high strung. And generally, sometimes high strung people want things a certain way. And I wouldn't see it past her being like, I don't want your stuff in this house because it doesn't go, even though I'm going to put my Pilates machine over here in the corner in the living room. When you probably have a room you could very well put it in.
But he chose to be in that relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that he's like, okay, I know that you don't want my like music posters up on your wall, and I'm going to get married to you.
It's just, okay, granted, I see your point of view, but I also was very gradually weaned out of my choices and opinions in the relationship that I was in last time, and how it happened over time, where I was like, what the fuck? And I took a step back and was like, holy shit, I am not even here in prison anymore.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see both sides of the story.
Absolutely.
And I can see how that sometimes happens over. Maybe that's why I'm like, let him put his stuff outside the room. Vanessa, let him put his stuff outside.
I feel like we are at a turning point of incompatibility and realizations, you know, and the baby is the, what is bringing it all together.
You can't have a baby to save your relationship. No, cannot have a baby to save your relationship. Please don't do that.
No. And she doesn't want a baby to save her relationship. She wants a baby because she wants a baby, you know. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when she finds out that he put the ad in the penny saver, she's like, what the fuck? And I think that him putting the ad in the penny saver, unbeknownst to her, was a big, like, oh, yeah, you want to, okay, we're going to take out an ad, see if we can get a parent. Yeah, I'll take care of that. I'll put our ad in the paper. The penny saver, winky winky, you know, it was like, oh, have a conversation with your partner, you know?
Oh.
Huh.
Juno drives off in her junker minivan crying. Eventually, she pulls over to the side of the road, cries some more, gathers herself together, and drives back to her hometown. She continues to kick around until it's dark, hanging out in front of the Honey and Milk liquor store. She ponders life, and her brain hamster is working that wheel. Suddenly, a light bulb goes off over her head, and she rummages in her car, pulling a yellow, crumpled piece of paper from her van. Back at Mark and Vanessa's, Vanessa is sitting by herself at the dining room table, trying to take it all in when Mark comes downstairs. He announces, I called Gerda, and she can be both of our lawyers. I guess it's called a collaborative divorce, and since we don't have any kids, it should be pretty easy. Vanessa blinks at him.
Add insult to injury, Mark. Add insult to injury.
Thanks? And she says, I guess you found a place to stay too? Mark responds, oh yeah, a loft in downtown. She was expecting a hotel or an Airbnb, and she realizes that he's been planning this for some time. Well, aren't you cool? Mark apologizes for being a dick. Oh, but wait, he doesn't. He's just happy to be free. Like, this conversation should not be a surprise when it happens. And this was like totally, wait, what? What happened? Like, she completely got the rug pulled out from underneath her. And I agree with you, Tam, that they don't seem to have room for each other. Like, they don't seem to be compatible in a nice symbiotic way, you know? And
That coupled with Mark's creeper feelings for Juno. That was just, hasn't even been addressed, that they were like a little too close, a little too friends, a little too happy to be spending time alone together.
Mm-hmm. And like, Juno was into it too, but Juno is also 16.
Right. Yeah. No.
So really what we're looking at here is, well, yeah, Juno was kind of like, oh, I sort of like dig this guy and getting attention from him. Mark, oh, slow your fucking roll there. What the fuck? What she was doing was sadly age appropriate and just like, yuck. But what he was doing was completely gross and inappropriate. Ugh.
Mm.
Thus, we wrap back around to Brenda's conversation with Juno about.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta. No, honey. No, 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 no.
Which brings me back around to my mom being Brenda and having these conversations with me, you know, as a teenager. And when I first saw this movie, honestly, I didn't look at Mark and be like, oh, he's such a creeper. I was just like, oh, yeah, I totally get it. Like, I was all feeling the Juno vibe. And then watching it now, I was like, oh, my God. You know?
What is happening? What is happening?
Yeah. I've done a lot of growing in between when this movie came out and now. Oh, how did you feel about Mark and Juno's relationship?
I have to look up when this movie came
2007.
Out. I could easily see my 16-year-old self falling kind of into that same, like, relationship.
Yeah.
And she always went over there when she was kind of like feeling her feels and being really emotional, hormonal, and it's same thing. Like I watched listened to a podcast recently about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton mm-hmm. and their yeah. inappropriate relationship and how she was a little bit older
yeah.
than Juno, but still that balance of power and mm-hmm. kind of using your clout, I guess,
yeah.
to, you know, act inappropriately where somebody kind of falls into this category too, because yeah. The whole time I watched it the first time in 2007, I was like, what is happening? What are you guys doing? What's going on? Like, I got the heebie-jeebies with them hanging out, and I was like really wanting something very platonic and innocent to come mm-hmm. out of it. But I was like watching a car crash in slow motion as it was happening. And I knew kind of deep down that it wasn't going to end well. And I was right. And I still now feel that way. Yeah. But Juno is still very endearing to me. And
oh, absolutely.
Again, I...
Yeah. No, he was the adult in the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked him too. And initially, and I was like, he's kind of cool. What are you doing with that 16-year-old? He seems like a badass guy. What are you doing with that 16-year-old? Used to be in a band. What are you doing with that 16-year-old?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, for me, I was so lonely as a teenager, and I was looking for any kind of attention I could get. It made me a really easy mark. And so, you know, my mom was like, that guy's too old. You should not be spending time with them. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Mom? We're just friends. You know, like the whole Brenda conversation. And it took me until, like, this movie came out and I was around 30, you know. But I still felt very, like, 20s, whatnot. And it was still very much like, oh, no, she has choice. She has autonomy. She's, like, doing what she wants to do, blah, 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 blah. And then as I got older, I saw, like, that power dynamic that I just never saw previously, because I was just such in the headspace of wanting to create these relationships and wanting to be loved and all of this other stuff, you know? And,
wow.
Yeah. And it took me a long time to see it. And, like, I look at Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, and she was in her early 20s. And I'm like, when you're in your early 20s, it's still, yes, you're more grown, but it's still not all there yet, you know? And
and there was the power dynamic.
Yeah.
He was the president of the United
yeah.
States. It wasn't just a guy that was living with his wife in a music, you know, with the music room and
yeah.
an unhappy marriage.
Yeah. Oh, Mark. As I said, Mark doesn't apologize for being a dick or anything. No.
Nor a statutory rapist, potentially.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, no.
Acting inappropriately or blindsiding his wife.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. Like, I would be more sympathetic to Mark. And, like, I don't think that I am glad that they are parting ways. But I would be more sympathetic to Mark if he was like, I'm really sorry I'm doing this. I just don't feel like I'm in the right place for this. I feel like we're going down two different paths. Instead,
right.
He's like, yeah, so, you know, I got the lawyer to get us a quickie divorce. And yeah, I already have a deposit on a studio, on a loft,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's just yeah. like, oh, so were you planning on telling me after you'd actually moved out? Question mark? Like, you know.
Yeah. No remorse, more like relief.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is weird.
And I know that as a person who has been in relationships where I have felt like we have grown apart and gone our separate ways, and in many ways our relationship has died, I have still, when I have broken up with the person, I have felt sad and bad, and there has still been a sense of loss for me, you know. But for him, there just doesn't seem to be that kind of thing going on.
Mm-mm.
Instead, he's like, Juno, you think I'm old? What's I'm like, you are old, Mark. You are.
Yeah. Even though Jason Bateman, you have a timeless face and don't seem to get old in real life, yes, you're old.
So, Mark doesn't apologize. He's just happy to be free. There's a knock on the door and the sound of burning rubber. Mark opens the door and picks up a yellow Jiffy Lube receipt. And Vanessa confidently says, it's for me, and grabs it from him. Juno returns home. Her dad is in the kitchen working on a motor. Dad affectionately says, hey, big puffy version of Junebug, where you been? Juno opens the fridge, just dealing with things way beyond my maturity level. Agreed, Juno. Agreed. Dad looks up from his motor. You look a little morose, honey. What's eating you? Juno flops onto a seat at the table across from her dad. Oh, just my faith in humanity. I wonder if it's possible that two people can stay together forever, Dad says. Well, I don't have the best track record, but your stepmom and I have been together for over 10 years, and we're very happy with each other. He recommends that she find someone who loves her exactly for who she is. The right person is still going to think the sun shines out of her ass. Juno says, I think I found that person. And Dad says, yeah, it's me.
I love her dad so much. Love him, love him, love him. I love in the part too where he thinks that she's having sex and he's like, I don't know, June, if I really am okay with you having sex in your condition. Isn't that a little messed up, a little skanky as you girls call it? Oh, which isn't the case, but still the fact that he's just like tuned into that. Like, yeah. Don't have sex while you're already pregnant, honey.
I don't know. I think it's the safest time to have sex. You can't get pregnant yet.
I know. I thought the same thing. I got the same thing. Well, have all the sex now. Get it out of your system. Find out what you like, huh? I'm just thinking like a 46-year-old single lady, though, unfortunately. Not a 16-year-old girl.
That night, Juno participates in some late-night hijinks with Besto.
Juno, Besto, Leo.
You're doing... Leo, Besto, Juno's Besto, Leo.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's a good thing I'm perfect.
Solo Leo, the best of friends of the girl Juno, together to the bitter end.
That night, she participates in some late night hijinks with Bestie Leah, and we see them running quickly from...
I had to work to say that correctly, by the way.
Don't do it!
Leo. We see them running quickly from Bleeker's house. The next morning, Bleeker heads out the door in his track gear and is greeted by a message. Check the mail. He opens the mailbox and containers of orange Tic Tacs flood out. He smiles happily. When he's practicing with the track team, Juno walks onto the track. And Polly sees her and jogs over. Hey, did you put a million Tic Tacs in my mailbox? Juno smiles. Yeah, that was me. I know you like them, so... He bleaks. I'm sorry I was shitty to you. And also, I think I'm in love with you. You're the coolest person I've ever met, and you don't even have to try. Polly smiles softly. I try really hard, actually. Juno continues. You're smart and unique. You see me for me, and every time I see you, the baby starts to kick really hard. She puts Polly's hand on her stomach, and he grins. Wizard. Wizard. Juno finishes. You're golden, man. And Polly looks at her. Can we make out now? And she gets a half smile. Yeah. And they kiss. And it's the work of Hallmark. Oh, the dry kisses of it all.
Hallmark sex, Hallmark kisses. Thought we were going to get away from it in this movie, and apparently not.
Nope.
That afternoon, back at home, Juno is using her belly as a ramp for her Hot Wheels car when she stops short. Dad! She yells urgently. Either I just peed my pants or... Or what? Her dad calls from the basement. Thundercats! Ho! I really enjoyed that reference. The family rushes out of the house to the hospital, almost forgetting Liberty Bell, the little sis, in the process. Leah meets him there and helps out by ramming Juno into things along the hospital corridor in a wheelchair. Once in her hospital room, Juno goes full on into labor and wants drugs, drugs, drugs. Brenda and Leah are playing her birth coaches as she pushes her son out of her vag. She decided not to call Bleeker when she went into labor because he had a big track meet, but he figured it out anyways and ran to the hospital. After the blessed event of birth, Juno's dad sits by her bedside, stroking her head and saying the most beautiful thing a father could say in this situation. Someday, Junebug, you will be back here for yourself, having a baby on your own terms.
Oh, aww.
Fucking ass. Adopt me. Adopt me. Just then, Polly arrives and Dad leaves the room to give them some privacy. He crawls into the hospital bed behind her and spoons and holds her as the sea of love plays gently in the background and Juno cries. She voices over that Bleeker decided that he didn't want to see the baby, and neither did I. They both felt like it wasn't theirs. It was always hers. We then see Vanessa outside the neonatal unit looking through the glass when a nurse approaches and asks if she would like to see her son. She says, "I have a son?" and goes to hold him. Brenda passes and sees her. Vanessa asks, as she holds the baby in her arms, if she's doing it right and how she looks. Brenda smiles and says, "Like a new mom. Scared shitless."
Aww.
The whole situation was tough on the McGuff family, but they had the best outcome for a shit sandwich situation. Juno ends the movie by saying it ended with the chair, and instead of the Barca lounger that the baby was conceived in, we see a rocking chair in the nursery, Vanessa's nursery, and above it, on that wall that was missing something, is the note Juno wrote that first night after she found out Vanessa and Mark were separating. It simply says, "Vanessa, if you're still in, I'm still in. Juno."
Aww.
Vanessa's holding the baby sweetly, looking at his face and stroking his hair, and we all know that she will do everything she can to give that child a good life.
Aww.
Back in Juno's world, it is summer, and she's no longer pregnant, but the track team is still running, still training, pork swords still jabbing the fronts of their very small, very yellow running shorts. Brenda's in the front yard of their house, and she finally got her Weimaraners and is happily playing with them as Juno comes out, gets on her bike, and rides off to Polly Bleeker's house. She voices over that, as far as boyfriends go, Bleeker's the bee's knees. He's the cheese to her macaroni. And she knows that people are supposed to fall in love before they reproduce, but normalcy was never really their thing. She gets to his house, and they sit on his front stoop and play the song that he was practicing earlier in the movie, "Anyone Else?" by the band The Moldy Peaches. And they gaze into each other's eyes as they sing us out of the movie. "You're a part-time lover and a full-time friend. The monkey on your back is the latest trend. I don't see what anyone could see in anyone else but you."
Oh, you made me so emotional.
What a ride. What a ride. Oh. What do you think about Juno? Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give it?
So many feelings. So many feelings. I don't know. On the diversity front, it gets an F.
Uh-huh.
On the rom-com front, it gets a D minus. And I think that we are going to have those kinds of movies, since we've opened things up more, that's going to happen sometimes. We're going to have some things that aren't really rom-coms, but, you know, yeah.
Especially if I pick them. Ha-ha.
Oh, I've got something up my sleeve for you.
Okay. Oh, you give me the finger guns and I'm a little nervous about it.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a failure on that front. But like I said, I think that is going to happen with us moving over into a bit of a broader genre at times. So there's that. It's a good movie. But I will say that I didn't really feel the connection between Juno and Polly. There wasn't really much of a flirtation. There wasn't really, for a couple that got, quote, sexy and passionate with each other, there was really no passion, even though there technically was some sex. Yeah, I felt like they did not feel like they were high school students who had crushes on each other. So that kind of didn't ring very true for me, but I felt like the movie was resonant in other ways. Will I ever watch this movie again? Probably not, unless Tamara is like, "This is my birthday wish. When we hang out together, I want to see Juno." And then I would totally sit down and watch it with you. You know,
nope, not gonna happen.
Fine. You don't want to see Juno with me? Fine. Be that way.
I've already seen it once with you, and we did a whole podcast on it. I think I'm good.
I'm going to give this... I'm going to do 3.5 dry kisses. I'm like wildly varying in feelings between 2.5 and 4. So...
Uh-huh.
I feel like 3.5 is a good resting place for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Tam? What do you give this movie?
Even though I love this movie wildly, I love the writing. I love J.K. Simmons. I love Allison Janney. the storyline was unique and interesting. I thought it was an interesting spin on it and pretty original. I agree with you between Juno and Polly, but any role, I have to say, Michael Cera, who plays Polly Bleeker, is pretty romanticless. Like, even in some of his more, like, rom-com movies, like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, mm-hmm. where it's them, like, sort of kind of, like, falling for each other throughout the whole night. He's kind of a one-note boyfriend character. Like, I think that's his superpower, and probably why I enjoyed him in this role so much, because Elliot Page was such a force to be reckoned with that she would probably want somebody that's kind of a little more complacent that would complement her fieriness. And I thought their dynamic worked, but I do agree it wasn't romantic. It also wasn't a super romantic comedy. I will give you that, and not diverse at all. So I'm going to agree. And even though I love the shit out of this movie as a rom-com, I would also give it 3.5 dry kisses.
I am so surprised. Also, I did want to mention Jennifer Garner, which I didn't really mention. Like, honestly, I felt like she could have gotten an Oscar for this role. The way that she played her character was so good and so strong and also so tender and vulnerable. And the micro expressions that would mm-hmm. flit across her face, like when Juno was like, yeah. well, you wouldn't want to be pregnant. You're lucky I'm just like doing this, you know, and yes. and she would get this expression on her face like, no, that's what I like. She doesn't say it, but you can tell by looking at her. She says, that's what I want more than anything, you know? And so yeah, like, totally. I just wanted to like, J.K. Simmons, Allison Janney, fucking fantastic. Both of them. And Jennifer Garner was just amazing in this movie.
Yeah. I also, that same conversation where they were like, are you looking for any other compensation? And she looks at Juno and uh-huh. her dad's like, wait, what? And she yeah. kind of just looks at him and like, I'm going to ignore that and look back at Juno uh-huh. because if you have an answer, I'm going to let you know that it's okay if you tell. I was like, yeah. all that, the conversation that she had in that one look, I completely agree with you. And I don't think we talked about her enough. Like she yeah. was just the right amount of uptight. I really want to be a mom, and I'm fucking like just gonna, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah. I give all the props to Jennifer Garner for playing a really difficult role because it could have read, particularly with the way they portrayed her in some ways, it could have read as really cold and really just like heartless with like the, as you said, like the putting the making sure the flowers are perfect and making sure the hand dryer things, hand towels are perfect, and you know, just like doing all of that.
<Hand dryer
things. laughs> Had to add that in because I realized it, and I was like, "Oh no, I'm not going to interrupt Tam in the middle of her summary." So
why I do it to you all the time?
Yeah, but it would have been me completely changing the topic. Like, oh yeah, you have these feelings, okay? But what I'm really talking about is the most important thing. We'll get back to you later.
That is Jennifer Garner, and here I go.
Well, you may have been a Mark fan. No, I'm just kidding.
It was not. Stop it.
No,
stop.
No, no. I completely understand the whole, like, getting swallowed by a relationship and not even realizing it until you, like, wake up and you're like, is this my beautiful life? Is this my beautiful house? How did I get here?
And the days go by, water flowing under, and the days go by,
water flowing underground, once in a lifetime. Yeah, totally get that.
Even though it's the same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was. Which is why sometimes you just got to break things up and move forward.
Agreed. Ugh.
Two tickets to paradise. Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Is it Two Tickets to Paradise?
Yes.
Is that the name of it?
Yes.
Is that why you sang a really weird rendition of Eddie Money's Two Tickets to Paradise? Pick your bags and be tonight. I got two tickets to paradise. Okay. Two Tickets to Paradise.
Yay! Starring Ashley Williams and Ryan Pavey.
Ooh.
This movie has a shirtless Ryan Pavey, just FYI. So, and some good lines in it.
I don't care. You lost me at shirtless Ryan Pavey.
Did I lose you or did I pull you in?
Oh, no. I just put the phone on mute so I could put the movie on right now before we... Oh, I guess I could wait till we finish this and then play it.
Fine.
Fast forwarding to try to find the shirtless Ryan Pavey scene.
I'm very much looking forward to doing this Hallmark movie, and Ashley Williams is a fucking delight, and she is our gust of change in the theme. Yes. If you have anything you'd like to say about Juno, two tickets to paradise, or it's lounge singer style. I've got two tickets to paradise.
No, just no. That's...
Fine. You can email us at windrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at OneDryKiss.
And as always, if you can find the time, we'd love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you listen to this podcast. But if you don't have the time, at least we'd like to thank you for stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
You know what they say?
What?
You got to get a guy under you to get over a guy.
You mean the best way to get over a guy is to get under one?
Yes. You did it the better way.
I appreciated your version, though.
Thank you.
I was like, that works, too. That works, too. Maybe it's just that phrase in a different position, which I'm okay with. Wouldn't stop for a pretzel. Pretzels are delicious at the mall. Fresh baked with the sauces that you dip them in. Mm-mm.
I've never had a mall I've never had a mall pretzel.
We're going to have to remedy that stat, Corinne.
Great. Let's go to the mall together. I can't wait. Why do you live so far away?